Hey, man.
We're up for doing this. We're up to this thing. Last time we did a whole spiel about the credit and taking credit and not taking credit. But my basic thing is like this. So let's read this last chapter, last piece again from Veda. And then I have a different shtetl to learn. Which is going to connect to this. I don't know if it's really connected to this, but this English stage. But at least I want to connect it to it. Seems to be important. It's like this. Right, so the Rambam said that he's going to give us a preface to Pirkei Avos, which is important in order to become a prophet. One of the things you have to have is good midos. So therefore you have to know how they work. We discussed a little bit how there's a knowledge to that. I'm going to understand that a little bit more today, hopefully.
What the practical knowledge about
there is it? There is some sort of like reason to be known that's going to help you. Although it's not about knowing the truth. Ethics, that's the prophecy part. In order to know the truth, you've got to get good ethics. But it's not the same thing, right? And that's what Pirkei Avos is about. That's like his identification, very important, one of his identifications. The subject of Pirkei Avos, or in general, Chazal's Musar, is basically about this ethics, right? What we call ethics, practical ethics. And therefore he has to give a preface, okay? That's until here. And then he says like this. And then he says like this, Veda. Okay, that's in the second line of the third paragraph on the first page. And if I would have been making the paragraphs, I would have cut a paragraph here. Maybe if you find over there the other guy, maybe he did it that way. I don't know if we can find it, but maybe you could. Let me see if I could find it. He also put it like this. Don't ask me why. Okay. I think they're all copying each other. Okay. So like this. Anyways, he says like this. The things that I'm going to tell you here, right? In the chapters and in the parish, are not things that I made up, right? I didn't make them up for myself, or I'm not sure we discussed this, what it means to make up things, but they're not things that I was mechadesh, that's his language, or things that I invented, that I like sort of originated with me. But what are they? They are things. They're compilation things, right? Milukat. And Yunim Milukotim. And so it's basically not me, but me compiling, which is, yes, me in some way, but not me in the sense of the content, like the main ideas or the real content of the ideas is not something that I made up, although he does give himself a very important thing, which is the compilation, which we should not like pretend is a small thing. It's a big thing. I discussed this a little bit. We did. No, we didn't.
We discussed it
a little bit more with the Mishnah Torah.
Yeah, but you can see over there that compilation is actually
the entire
thing. Although it's not original, claiming originality for the thought. It's not originating thoughts, which is important to realize that he doesn't see himself as an originator of thoughts, which means he doesn't do philosophy ever in his books. He does do a lot of. There is something important in the organization. Yes, okay. But he is taking it from where? From two or three different kinds of sources. The first kind of source is Chachamim, so our Chachamim, in three different books. The kind of books they wrote. One is known as Talmud, the second known as Medrash, and the third known as others. Miscellaneous category. Doesn't say what that means. So that's the Chachamim. And then it's from the philosophers. And there's two kinds of philosophers, old ones and new ones. And there's also many people Who knows who those people are? Okay, and then it says it has this like slogan: Shmas Emes Mimisha Amra. Right? Remember, Pi Amra. Hear the truth from whoever said it. Mimi means like from whoever, right? From whoever said it, hear the truth. And this line is a very famous line, but actually a lot less clear than it seems to be because of.
It fails how it's spoke.
Well, because if it means, let's say, if it means that there is a sort of purely rational way of accessing the truth, which is not, you don't need any academics, right? You don't need any preparatory things, knowledge or not knowledge, or like agreed upon things, right? Either opinion or knowledge, right? You have no starting point. You're going to start somehow from the pure, purely known things and getting to the purely known things. Like the ideal of a science, right? The ideal science are supposed to be that way. Then we don't really need anyone to tell us that. That's obvious, right? And the main problem in this context that I have with that is that that's not what he's talking about. Because he's saying himself that he is taking this, compiling this out of the works of many people. He's not saying, well, this is just the pure truth I've deduced out of my heart or something like that. And every human as a rational being can deduce it by himself. It doesn't say that, right? And this slogan actually doesn't say that, right? It says, listen, Shema Emes Mimish, it's telling you to listen to people. It's not telling you don't listen to anyone, only listen to whatever you could figure out in your basement. It's saying you should listen to people. You just shouldn't be worried about who the person is, which is almost a self-contradictory thing. Because if you should be listening to people, then you definitely should care who the people are. If you're doing math and you don't care, it's just maybe the person is like a vessel, like some kind of, how do they call it, dumb pipe in internet language, of getting like one bit and then the other, then okay, then it doesn't matter who the person is. But that's not what this saying is even saying, right? And it seems to be even more obvious than that if you read the next line, and it's obvious, but even before that, obviously the like thing that he's justifying himself from is like, okay, when you say a malak is from the Chachamim, then people, okay, nice, see it. Wrote a bunch of Mori Chazan. Then tells them, okay, and a bunch of other people, and I'm like, well, those people, they're just pagans and Muslims. And I'm like, wow, what's going on? They say, no, Shema Emes Mishandra. Right? And then again, if those pagans are just telling us math, like, okay. But if they're telling us something more substantial than that, and something that we need to learn from them, right, we can't actually do it ourselves. Then we're back at the question, like, what's the reason for doing that? Right? Okay, that's the main basic question that we had about this. We made the question even stronger, I think we did.
Oh, I mean, to me, I guess the simple answer is don't care about who's saying it as you hear what they say, but knowing who it is might tell you that they have more truth content based on consistency or based on something.
Oh, they have less, actually. He thinks that it's one, like the words working here is that if you'll know who it is, you'll take it less seriously. You could have Shema Emes Mishna Amra, and then he could have quoted, you know, it's weird because he's saying that he's quoting all kind of Jews and non-Jews, basically. And he could have said, oh, it says, Ezi Chacham Elevin Mikal Adam. Is that in Pirkei Avos either? So then you should say, oh, Kvar Omri Chazal, that it should be Levin Mikal Adam, or like some other Omri Chazal people like to quote in this kind of context. Chachma Begoyim Tamen, Chves. And you'll notice that he's actually quoting a apparently Muslim aphorism. In order to justify to the Yid that he should listen to Muslims, he quotes a Muslim. That doesn't work. You should say, Chazal Zum, that you're allowed to listen to Goyim said that. But the Goyim say they should listen to them. I mean, yeah, of course they say. Okay, so obviously they're very complicated. Obviously, yeah, not saying they should listen to them.
I guess, out of context, right? If I want to learn from certain people, okay, how does this person think? What have they thought until now?
Oh, it would be very cool to learn from people in the sense of as an ethical imperative, as like, don't.
Also to aid, I'm saying, unless you're.
Well, no. If there is such a thing as truth and there is such a thing as non-truth, like if there are bad ideas and good ideas, then obviously we should not take anyone's idea seriously.
No, but we should take anyone's idea seriously. We should take the idea seriously, right? Where do you find good ideas?
I mean, again, if we're using a so again, we can talk about two different ways of doing that. if you want to use anyone's, well, opinions, right? If you use the word opinion. If you say you should judge every opinion, that comes down to saying don't take anyone's idea seriously, right? You could use anyone's opinion as a starting point in order to frag him up, in order to say why, if or why or how he is correct.
Deny truth claim. So if you look at the deposit, then you might want to look.
Well, in both ways, but the point is what that person is giving you is only an opinion. It's not anything beyond, you know, that's your opinion, man, right? So that might be cool to find out everyone's opinion.
People could know the truth. People know the truth.
Do am I denying it?
No, I'm saying there's the statement, Shram's Misham, does it
deny that people can know the truth?
No, I'm saying that it's a very cool slogan, but it doesn't seem to actually help anyone ever. It's only useful if you already know the truth and you want to tell it, say it in the name of someone I wouldn't accept it, so you say, well, you know what? Just listen to it because it's true. But then you might as well say the truth doesn't care who said it. Which is not, but that's not what this is saying. Like I said, because this is not what not what anyone that says this is doing it is doing. He's not saying, well, if you can follow the deduction, it doesn't matter who said it.
Yeah, I think it's just a it's not, I don't know if
it's a clue. It's not nothing more than that, I don't think.
A clue? What do you mean by a clue?
Meaning, okay, if you want to know the truth, listen to people who say it, right? Now, who says it? You know, find someone who says the truth.
Well, nobody says the truth. In the sense of nobody says that nothing is true because
you're not saying that the truth belongs to them. I'm saying that they happen to.
So you have to figure it out for yourself. Either you have to figure it out for yourself, in which case nobody is useful.
Yeah, but let's say you do. No, why? But why wouldn't people be useful?
Well, you tell me how they would be useful.
I don't know. You go to a class.
Okay, well, why do you come to my class? Because I know the truth. But if you wouldn't have known that, you shouldn't have come. Or no, it's like.
Say, people do enter into the circle. By, I guess, illegitimate means, right?
Or something.
But wait, so again, that's what I'm saying. So there's two, like...
The person almost what makes it true, but the person might be...
Might be a good mistake from which you can get to the truth?
Yeah, or a reliable mistake.
Okay, so thank you very much. So that's, like, literally the spirit of what you're saying is the opposite of the spirit of Shema Emes Misha Amra. Because what you're saying is frag up everyone, and everyone's mistakes can be a way to the truth. But the way to the truth itself is something separate from what all the people's opinions.
Mistakes isn't there.
Yeah.
And I don't even.
As in there.
I don't even know if I'd go that far. I think people that know
something
probably know more truth, right?
Again, if I'm going to be figuring everything out by myself, maybe some people's opinions might be useful to me. We have to have a good way of saying how they could be useful.
Figure it out by yourself,
meaning by deduction of what? Of just self-originated principles?
However, the pure truth is supposed to work, yeah.
I'm saying other people deal in this space.
Again, if those people are teaching me math, then we don't need the statement. So we already denied that side of the discussion. If when we say Shema Emes Misha Amra, we mean to say that if the fact that a evil person is showing you where a red light is and is just pointing to you and now you can see it yourself, for that we don't need no nice Musar statements called Shema Emes Misha Amra. That one is like obvious. Nobody disagrees with it. Nobody ever disagreed with it. Right? I mean, might be some crazy person somewhere, but even that person doesn't really disagree with it. Right? So that's not what it's talking about, right? It's talking about listening to humans, not listening to the knowledge. If you would say, I mean, it seems to say that, but it's not actually saying that. It presents itself as saying that, but if you think for 5 seconds, you'll notice that it's not saying that. It's not saying truth doesn't belong to anyone, and therefore the truth, wherever it is true. Everyone agrees with that. What it is saying is that things that you do not know yourself to be true, right, you should listen to other people. It's worth listening to other people. To other people, for them, about them.
Okay.
That's necessarily what it's saying, and it you could say that in like sort of two different ways. You could say that in the way of like, again, you could say, well, every mistake is an opportunity for correction, and maybe certain mistakes have certain. Well, the word mistake is really weird, but certain opinions, unjustified knowledge, certain opinions are. Reveal some aspect of the truth, like because someone made a certain mistake that would like wake you up to a certain possibility and somehow would get you closer to the truth, right? But the criteria for truth is not that person, it's just that person is useful.
Does this deny truth being a teachable thing?
Well, the truth as such is not a teachable thing, of course not. teachable in the sense of the knowledge is not something you actually get from a teacher. Like everyone says, the teacher can make you know in the similar way to like food and not being a servable thing. Of course, you could serve me food, but I got to eat it myself. You could serve me knowledge, but I got to know it myself. Right? So it sounds weird when you say it's not teachable. That's all we're trying to teach. But it doesn't work by being accepted from the teacher. It works by doing the work yourself. But now we're again, when you have already a teacher case is not the case that Shema Emes Mishamre is about. Because if someone has a teacher that's assuming a very different kind of relationship, you already think somehow, good question, how? Somehow you think that this guy has the truth and you want to learn his truth or his way to the truth. But Shema Emes Mishamre is assuming you don't know that this guy has the truth, right? You should listen to him. Why? If you already know that he has the truth, then we don't need any statements. Only for like the very most banal thing, like if there are good teachers, you should listen to them no matter what their race or religion or whatever it is.
Okay.
That's a very reasonable thing to say, but either it's obvious or it's wrong. Like most interesting things. Because on the one hand, it's obvious, like the maths case, for example. On the other hand, it's wrong. Because things that are not actually provable then it's wrong for two different reasons, right? And one is that if we're meaning to say that I need to be able to figure out the truth, in other words, there's some self-evidentness or something like that of the truth when it's presented. Okay, let's even say that we need that person to present it for some reason. It's a good question why, but let's say, but in the end, that what the learning is going to be happened by me myself, right? So then I don't need I might need it as some sort of like practical direction. Like sometimes you should do that and not deny yourself that opportunity, but you will learn from yourself, not from that person. Right, and the other side of it, you will be talking about things that are not so simply true. For example, ethics. The Rebbe of ethics himself, Aristotle, said that do not look for demonstrative proof in ethics. That doesn't exist. At least not in the details. Maybe he might think that in some general sense it's possible. But okay. But at least, and right. And especially if you read a book like Shmuel Perukim, which doesn't even pretend to give arguments. It just says things. You just gotta believe him. Right? So, why would you listen to this? What this person is saying? Shmuel Emes Mishamre is not at all useful because, for one, I don't have the tools to figure out if it's true, and he's not teaching them to me. And secondly, it's not clear that there is a demonstrative truth about these subjects. And it seems to be very obvious that the kind of person you are will determine the kind of ethics you teach. Huh? At least assuming that there isn't some ideal ethic that can be taught like math, which we're assuming. And therefore, before I learn from someone, I should not listen to Mimisha Amrev, definitely not in Midas Toivis. I should listen from good people, maybe. You could say something like that. You should listen to all good people, but not to anyone. So now we've inserted a very important criteria that you could learn from a Muslim, but he has to be a good person. And we have to show us, I mean, nobody showed us yet that these people that he is being malakit from are good people.
That's what the book is here to teach us.
Is it?
Give us criteria.
Yeah, but that's backwards. Right? There's the loop here. That's a problem. There's a basic problem. That's a different problem. I'm just saying that there's a very big riddle in what the Rambam is playing, what game he's playing here. The only way I think you could make it consistent preliminarily is by saying that, of course, Shema Emes Mishamre is something that Rambam himself did. So since he did study the sources or their causes for these things being true, the reasons, he's, of course, telling it to us in a dogmatic way. But he's telling us, don't worry about me stealing it from some people you might think are bad people because they're not bad people, and I know that. But meanwhile, you got to rely on me. That's like sort of the way you can make it coherent.
Which is also somewhat paradoxical, right?
It's paradoxical only in the sense of not justifying itself. In other words, he didn't justify himself to us as a teacher, but he assumes everything that Rambam wrote, and basically everything anyone, not anyone, but anything that Rambam writes, he writes from a position of authority. He already, the work of telling us why to read his book, he assumes someone else has done for him. It's actually a very interesting fact, but it's a fact. he knows about that when he writes, because he doesn't write to people as equals. Maybe in some places in Meir Nevechim, but in general, he writes as the one that knows, at least telling the one that doesn't know, and he even allows himself all the rhetorical tricks most of the time, you know, to get you to close to the truth by ways that are not entirely true. So obviously, he assumes that he already has the authority to teach, and he doesn't have to only prove things to us. But so then if he's doing that, so then this is also part of that game. It's like, if someone asks me a kasha, oh, you're quoting Aristotle, don't worry. I have halacha kabbalah as mishamah. But really, what's going on is just everyone is just believing the Rambam. The whole from beginning to end. And of course, the Rambam himself, yeah. If we have that, and some, like, there are some discussions in the book itself. Like, do I accept Aristotle's opinion on this? Do I accept Chazal's opinion on this? And of course, he's the one doing the judging. So yes, to him himself is really a sort of objective judge. But the person reading it gains nothing, basically, out of the Shema and Mishamra, besides for, like, you should read this book. Okay. Let me finish the sentence, and we'll try to solve some of this riddle. Or at least talk about it. Then he says like this. Sometimes I quote an entire paragraph. It says Memre Shlaima. It means something like entire paragraphs, because there are entire paragraphs in this book that are basically quoted from others. And it's the language of a famous book. Lishon Sefer Mefirsim. I don't know if Mefirsim means famous. It means something like well known or published, like something that if you well read, you'll recognize what I'm saying. And there's nothing wrong with that. Bembekol Zeru. So he doesn't hold of modern plagiarism standards. People have done the work and like shown entire paragraphs of Shemayna Prokim, which are lifted from Al-Farabi's work. The political something. Forgot what it's called. Anyways, which is sort of has a similar goal to this book. So, but he really explicitly said that he's doing that. He didn't say from who he's doing it, but he said explicitly that he's doing it, and he said there's nothing wrong. Why not? So listen, they said like this. So what could be wrong? It could be wrong if you would be doing this to fool someone, right? If you would like be taking credit that is not yours. He says, I'm not doing that. Any mispar b'masha amre mishakoda, right? I'm not stealing. I'm not plagiarizing in the sense of taking credit for some work that someone else did, because I already admit it. I told you this is a compilation. This is an anthology. This is not my original work. Okay, well then I have a question for you. Why don't you just say, Amar Pliny, kach v'kach? So here he has a very interesting answer. He said like this. He's assuming that I'm had this question. He says, although I don't do this, I don't do Amar Pliny, Amar Pliny. He says, number one, that's a waste of ink. Why? He really believes this, by the way. This is not just an excuse. He really believes this. And the reason is because you gain no knowledge from knowing who said it. Right, assuming Shema Emes Mishamra work, whichever level it worked, these things are true. And just quoting all the time is Arichas Entelesba. It just makes the work longer and doesn't have any use. Again, the only use it might have, would have had is like to disavow his own credit. And he can do that in a general way. He doesn't have to do that in a particular way. Okay, of course it could have a use because someone wants to look up the source. What about that one?
Also, give credit to people.
Yeah, but he said, I'm giving you a general credit, like personal list credit. Of credits,
I mean,
specific credits, like credit. So the Rambam has a shitta, and he also does the same exact thing in Mishnah Torah. And he says, you know, everyone before him, he wrote books, Omar of Kach V'Kach, and so on, and I'm just giving you the results of their discussions without saying names. And then he says, yeah, okay, I will tell you all of their names. So in the beginning of Mishnah Torah, I mean, more like in the beginning of... He sort of does that in the beginning of Mishnah Torah, and even more in the beginning of Perush HaMishnah. He's like, here's a list of all the Torah Amiraim. Now everything is from that. Without like ascribing specific members to specific people. That is actually a very, like, and some people say, okay, that's like a patent. Like the Chiyah, the Bashem Amiraim, you can be it's a boyfriend clearly. This is a list of all the names, and this is all the things, and you could figure it out. You don't have to specifically. But probably the real answer is not that he like thinks that Yoitz Amir like that. It's that he's weighing the costs and benefits of doing that, right? So of course, even to this day, there is a cost to like having detailed footnotes. And the cost is that it becomes harder to read. And the Rambam says that he values the clarity of reading, which is like his work, the compilation, the organization, over the precision of ascribing to his sources. I think that that's true nowadays also. Again, there's like worse and better ways of doing that, but sometimes someone writes a book that's just like quotations and keeps on, like, I don't care who said it, just give me the idea and shine. And if you want me, you could do like a further reading, you know, if you want to find out more about this, look. And he sort of does that. Okay, so now, that's to answer the problem of like credit. It's a waste of time. But more than that, there's a problem also. And there's also a real negative which would have happened in that. The Efshel if Amim, and this is like the real argument which Ma'amas Mish Amr, I think, is trying to answer to. Of course, he's writing everything backwards. The Efshel if Amim, Shashem Ishahi Yachnes Belev Mish'ain Tzvinaboy. There are some dumb people. And dumb people, if I would do this correct way, so like, you know what? Maybe it would be correct to say Umar Aristo, Umar Al-Farabi, and so on. But if I would do that, I would not be doing my job well. Why not? Because there are some stupid people. And those people without good judgment, it says here. Those people, when reading this, they would think that that means that what I'm saying is bad. Or evil. And what would they say? They would say like this. This is a very important language, because he's saying, let's say I would write a book, and I would say something that sounds reasonable to a normal person. You know, it's good to be in the middle way of most middos and something like that. Someone would read it and say, okay, sounds good. But then if I would preface it by saying, Aristotle said that you should choose the middle path in general, then someone will say, wait, I've heard that this Aristotle guy once ate a chazanah in Yom Kippur or something like that. And therefore, I know that it sounds reasonable, but there's something hidden that's wrong about this. And I know that I can only access the surface level meaning. I don't know what is wrong with this. But I do know, by virtue of knowing who it is, that there must be something wrong. Just like when I read something from Moshe Rabbeinu or from the Rambam, and I believe that sometimes I can only get at the surface of it, but I think there's something under the surface, something, what's called pimiut, internal. And that's the word that he's using it. Something internal that is deeper, that is more true, or that's not on the surface. And just because of the trust or the belief that you have in the writer. The same thing works the opposite way, where people that don't believe in the writer or in the person saying it, they assume that there is something evil internally. And what might that mean? That could mean a lot of things. And since I'm not a good judge, again, if I would be this ideal judge of the ideal science, I don't care. I could figure it out myself, and I only believe anyways what is correct to me. But since I'm not that, since I'm just a simple man, so I only read things that I can trust don't have like some hidden or some tricky evil meaning in them. Now, the people that say this are dumb. I have no idea why they're dumb. They seem to be saying something very rational to me. The Rambam calls them dumb people or people without judgment. It's not clear how you translate. He says, "Embe tevino." And some of the people translated this word as no judgment. If we say no judgment, then it makes sense. It's like someone that doesn't have his own judgment. But if he's calling them a stupid person, and that person might be right. Because if the Rambam is doing it, so he's relying on the Rambam's judgment, but otherwise he might be right. If it's, according to this translation, it sounds to me that he's saying a very not nice word about a person that is actually right.
He's right in what sense?
In the sense that if you do not have a way of judging statements by Aristotle and figuring out if they're correct, although on the surface they sound nice, so you're normal, you're a good guy, right? You're Shema in the sense of just being a good midder, right? Why wouldn't you listen to someone? Say something sounds reasonable. Listen to him. But since I'm a simple fellow, I have not studied philosophy. Often some people say something, and then if you follow through all the conclusions from it and all the things it's based on, all the things that come out of that, you'll discover it leading to some very, very bad conclusions. So therefore, I just make a blanket rule. I don't listen to people who I don't have already trust in. That's a very good rule. This is actually what, like, if you think about it, this is actually what everyone else says. People very often like to... We didn't tell this last time. The people very often like to say, like, you know, the Rambam is rational, is Shema Es Misha Amre, and the Chassidus Shech West people, they're anti-rational because they say Shema Emes, Beglal Misha Amre, but not from whoever, but from the one, right? And then you're like, those are people that are crazy because they don't believe in the truth, they only believe in authority. But then if you actually talk to those people and you'll ask them, okay, so you think that the truth, things become true because of who says them? Most people will say, of course not. Of course, ideally, in the way things themselves are, things are true because of their true. And even ideally, if I would have the discernment, if I would have the judgment, if I would know how things work from like first principles, I could figure everything out, I could listen to anyone. And even though, you know, the Rambam was like that, so therefore he was allowed to. But us normal people, we're not like that. We have no idea how things work. So we have to sort of rely on faith, but we have to like rely on people we trust. And that's an extremely reasonable thing to say.
They're problematic, because how do you know what to trust?
Yeah, it's problematic, because I agree that there's a problem with that. But it seems to me, I mean, it's actually, there's no way out of this, number one. Like, we do this all the time. And probably people will say something like, it's easier to figure out who to trust. It's not. I don't know if it is. But people would seem to think that it's easier to figure out who to trust than to figure out things in themselves. Is that true? I don't know. You know, that is.
It also casts you at this.
I think it's sort of true. I mean, at least if you rely. Work, it's like more accessible. Well, the question is, if you're a dumb person, then you have no way of judging who is the good doctor. But it turns out that most people do a pretty good job at finding more or less reasonable doctors. It's actually the people that judge things for themselves that make more mistakes, usually. In general, in the way the world works. Huh? For the most part, well, you could say, well, you're trusting the establishment or something like that. But that's what the best you've got. At least, you know, you have an Overton window, like you're bounded in how big your mistake can be.
If you rely on it too thoroughly, then you only have trust, right?
Nobody's saying you shouldn't, if you're a smart person, you shouldn't go further. I'm talking about someone that acknowledges that he's not smart. Or that he's not smart in a certain discipline or a certain area, right?
Right, okay.
And for example, and by the way, the Rambam himself says this. This is not something that I'm saying, that crazy people, what it says, I'm thinking now we shouldn't translate it that way because it would be bad. People with no judgment. The Rambam himself wrote a halacha in L'chsevet Ezer, Perik Beis, and he said that there is a Torah to read the arguments that go against the Torah. And everyone's like, well, you forgot that you're a rationalist, Mr. Rambam. Didn't you tell us that everyone should do it? I mean, you just told us like a few chapters ago that we should all discover that there's a God. And how would we ever do that without considering arguments? And of course he should. And he actually says the answer right in the page in L'chas Avodah Zarah Perek Beis. And he says, because most people do not know logic. He says, Hamidas Shiyodim Bem, it means logic, or maybe like basic metaphysics. And most people don't know how thought works, so they don't have the tools. So they're probably just going to make themselves more confused by so-called thinking for themselves. They're not really thinking for themselves because they don't know what thinking means, but they're for themselves without thinking. So you might as well just, he doesn't really say this, but he says, for those people, I'm telling them, don't read those books. And if you're asked, okay, so why would those people listen to you? The answer is like what I said before, we're already in that world. This book is written by someone who assumes that people listen to him. He's not here to justify why you should listen to him. Like, it seems to work. People say the Rambam says you're not allowed to. Well, they just listen to him. So obviously he wasn't even incorrect in that judgment that he's writing from a place of authority. And of course, the moment you don't accept that authority, you can't say that because it's useless. Like, it's a waste of time. Like, why shouldn't I listen to you? Of course. Okay, then you have to use arguments. But then we're going to really have to go the long way, which is explain what arguments are and how they work. You're not going to have any other choice. But the point is that the Rambam himself agrees that someone that doesn't know how to apply his own judgment is going to be better off by accepting someone else's judgment. And yes, he's going to have to use his own bad judgment for finding the person who has good judgment. And sometimes this works, sometimes not. And this is why it's important for the people with good judgment and the people that know to become the philosopher kings, right? In order to make sure that everyone else has at least good opinions, even if they can't have knowledge. That's what the whole idea of the Torah. That's why we have society. I mean, yeah, and of course, if you're stuck in a bad society where there's a bad king, then you're basically going to have wrong opinions, and that's why we have to do jihad against you. Anyways, this is all Rambam. I didn't make any of this up. The point is...
We're just talking about jihad?
Melchus, Melchum, Melchum, and Melchamas.
What's that?
The wars of the of Hashem. Yeah.
It's Melchamas and Shista now.
Yeah, but it's okay. Well, no, I'm going to move topic. The point is, he recognizes, I'm not saying that's the solution, I'm saying he recognizes the problem that you can't actually convert the whole world to the truth without fighting sometimes. It might have been better to do it now without fighting, but it's a real problem. That's if you don't have an army. If you have an army, then you should definitely conquer the city rather than go to the mid. I mean, basically, if Mashiach didn't come, Mashiach is that person. The Kitzur Rambam says that this is something that he agrees with. This is why I don't think it's correct to say that the Rambam is against that. He's not against that for most people. And it's pretty much explicitly does this for most people. Back to where I am. So, but what is his answer to the problem, right? We don't know what his answer to the actual question is, right? If someone says, right, we see his strategy, right? He's doing a tactic here. He's saying, since many people will, and I'm adding rightly, he makes it sound like not rightly, but I think rightly. Well, if you have an argument why they're wrong, you tell me, because I don't know. Most people, if Shmoneh Prokem, instead of saying, you know, da, this is the way things are, Mr. Rambam said, or Mr. Rambam said, and he told you with fetish and it's like, don't know that it's not Rambam, well, nobody seems to believe that. So anyways, though it works. If it would be like, you know, Aristotle said this, and that other guy said that, and so on, many people will...
It's just saying that you're wrongly going to assume that they're bad people because they're not Jewish.
Yes, possibly. But that also needs to be, like, shown. And there's a little problem because they're bad people. They're good people by their own criteria of being good people. Everyone, I don't know. But he's using their criteria, right? It's even worse. He's teaching us how to be a good person by the lights of Aristotle, more or less. Which means, first you have to know Aristotle's a good person, and then you have to buy his theory of being a good person. And of course, if someone says, this sounds good, that's something, even if it sounds reasonable to you, and you even have like a Mamma Chazal to connect to it or something, I would say, well, if the Rambam is saying clearly, if I would say that this is Aristotle's theory, people would not accept it because of this heuristic that they're going to apply, right? Maybe it's not an argument, but this heuristic that they will apply, which says, bad people or people I don't know or outside my circle of trust or however you want to say it, sometimes say things that sound good but are internally bad. And therefore, he says like this, therefore, I'm going to finish, therefore, I have a solution. I'm just going to lie to you. This is an amazing thing where someone comes and says, Sheet Aleph, in this series of classes, we're going to be lying to you. And then everyone comes back the next week. And that's what happened. Well, we're not going to lie. We're going to omit the full truth. This is why I decided, I've seen, in other words, I thought seems correct to me, to not tell you who it is. In other words, why am I doing this? For your own good, right? Because I am very much focused, and this goes back to something that we said in the beginning, where everything must be judged by its goal, by its end, or by its criteria, right? If someone writes a book, so if the Rambam's goal of this writing this book would be to write the most accurate book or to get a PhD, then obviously he shouldn't have been doing this. Because to get a PhD, you've got to quote your sources, and you have the like goal of writing a doctorate is sort of that there should be a big file of papers in the shelf somewhere which says the truth, then obviously you can't be doing this. But since his goal is not that, his goal is to help the reader, in other words, make him to a good person, right? And he knows that if he's going to not accept it, he's not going to be a good person. So therefore, I will just do whatever it takes to make you accept what I say, including omitting the sources. And if you ask me, is that a bad thing? Well, it's a bad thing judged by one criteria, at least not a fully good thing. Like himself, like even though he said, well, I already told you and everything, it's still not the best thing, but it's the best thing for my criteria, which is helping the Jews. And this is the big thing. The Rambam is always only into helping Yidden. There's no other goal in all of his writings. And therefore, that's the goal by which it should be judged. Did it help people? That's what he says. So if you just read this all as like strategy, how do you get Goyish ideas into the Yiddish Shabbos Medrash, which you believe are helpful, of course? So you should focus on helping the people, not focus on being smarter than them or anything like that. And if sometimes that demands to not tell people where it comes from, say, don't tell them where it comes from. And the Rambam didn't even lie, because he like said this. And it's so funny that he said it and it didn't bother anyone. In other words, he's saying this. In other words, let's think for a second. In other words, this Hagdama, this little piece, also has a goal. Right? And its goal doesn't seem... I don't think the goal is to clear the Rambam's consciousness from conscience, right? From saying, like, I lied. No, I wrote a little disclaimer in the beginning that I'm lying, so therefore I'm not lying. I mean, maybe it's for that. Maybe that's the point. I think there are more points. It's actually very, very interesting how you could tell people that you're going to lie to them, and if they trust you, they're going to say, yeah, please lie to me.
Please.
But maybe they're right, because again, if it's in order to make them better or to help them in some way.
People trust doctors for that.
Yeah, people very often say, please lie to me, but make sure it's a good lie, like the right lie in the right direction. But I think also, probably this whole paragraph is also, so it has another meaning. The other meaning is that it is a way for someone, for the, like 1 in 10 million people, who want to break out of being manipulated by the Rambam, to break out. All right, that's us. Also, you notice this whole game, and we're like, okay, so how about actually knowing what you're telling us? Right? In other words, how about taking this Shemaim's Mishamba for a real direction, which basically doesn't mean reading the next chapter. I mean, it might be useful still, but it means doing what you did. And I think that's the real, that's the esoteric meaning of paragraphs like this. That he always does this, and this is another very important, again, he's still thinking on the TLS, he's still thinking of how to help someone, but this is about helping the elite instead of helping the people that will believe him. It's about helping people that don't believe him. And that's like an important thing. It's like you need to
speak at two times.
Yeah, there needs to be the Rambam praises Moshe and the Torah for doing that. You need to leave an opening for the smart people always. So otherwise, what helps other people ruins them. So, and by doing this, you both help the regular people, and without ruining this man. I don't know if it helps them, but at least it doesn't ruin them. It leaves them some space. Yeah, so that's basically like them, right? That's where I'm going to start. What I wanted to do, I was wanted to connect to this. I don't know if it actually connects, but what I wanted to connect to this is Aristotle's discussion of how to start reading the ethics, or how to start studying a subject called ethics. It's two whole pages here. I don't know if we can do it, but it seems to be very important. Let me see. Should I just read it a little bit? Yeah, let's just read it a little bit. The best thing. Okay, so this is like the preface to the subject of ethics. He already in the previous two chapters sort of defined the subject, which we're not going to get into right now. We'll get to it. But he's doing something like in some way prior to that, which is talking about who should be the student for this course. Who should come? Okay. And it says like this. There's like these two parts in there. You could see the two chapters and the two paragraphs on this page, which is chapter 3. And they talk about two things which are very much connected to each other. The first paragraph talks about how, and this is the statement that we keep on repeating, how you speak adequately it is enough, right? The correct way of speaking about every subject is to gain the amount of clarity or the amount of precision which belongs to that subject, right? Precision, right? For example, right, it's not here, and it's in the end of the thing. It says, it belongs to an educated person to look for just so much precision in each kind of discourse. This is the end of this paragraph. As the nature of the thing one is concerned with admits. This is how you be, how what is belongs part of being an educated person. So one of the things, and this is, by the way, this is another weird thing, like, how did he ever get educated? By being taught things like this. And why is these things like this good? Because educated people act that way. Okay? But educated person is someone that looks to as much precision as the nature of the thing he is concerned with admits. Four, and this is like he gives a very poor famous example, for the domain demonstrations from a rhetorician seems about like accepting probable conclusions from a mathematician. Right? So if you go to an old-fashioned mathematician and you accept when he explains something with a mushal, or with an analogy, or with like something that makes you feel that he's correct, or something like that, then he's absolutely not doing his job. He shouldn't accept it. But it's just as crazy to go to someone whose job is to teach you rhetoric, and rhetoric is defined by Aristotle as the art of persuasion, right? Not the art of truth, but things that persuade, and if you need to use emotional arguments and all kinds of things like that. And that will not be use demonstrations or proofs in the way a mathematician does. And if you go to the person who's teaching rhetoric or to the rhetorician and you ask him for that kind of proof, you're also doing a mistake. Right? Or the sort of image that he's thinking of in the beginning is like different matter, different material can be cut up sort of in different ways, right? Like a correctly ripped up piece of paper looks something like this. That's the correct way of ripping it up. I don't have to do it in the lines. No reason to do that. Doesn't the underlying matter doesn't admit of doing that. But if I want to do like cut a diamond or something like that, the kind of mad thing that it is going to need a lot of precision in order to be correct. So anything coarse, and there's some coarse materials, and you say, well, you're not cutting the pizza as straight as you should cut even a piece of paper. And that's just dumb. Because pizzas, unless you're like really autistic, pizzas don't need to be cut as straight as papers. And papers don't need to be cut as straight as, you know, a diamond or something that where it's even more important. Not only more important, it's also like the kind of thing. So that analogy carries over to like areas of thought, areas of research, areas of discussion, which we call disciplines. Right? If you're doing math, then you should always look for the correct kind of proof. Even in math, now there's a lot of different kinds of math with different levels of proof. But if you're doing rhetoric, then you should be happy with rhetorical proof. In the same way, right? People, right? We know this all the time.
How would one, I guess, so then, the goodness or truth of those.
Yes,
arguments.
Right. Very good. Very good. Now, they're not. They're, that doesn't mean that there's no criteria. See, there's a lot of things between demonstration and nihilism. A lot of things. Unlike what most people seem to think, that if there's something that can be demonstrated and something that can't, then all those things you can just say whatever you want. Only you can't say whatever you want. Just like if I caught right. Just like. Going back to my silly analogy, if I cut a pizza and I like give myself like I'm here to cut up my pizza pie, and I'm going to cut it into four pieces, and one of the pieces is going to be like 70% of the pizza, and the other two are going to each have 15%, then I did a very bad job of dividing the pizza. Although if I cut it into four, well, that was I only ended up with three pieces. Anyways. Although if I got it into four roughly even pieces, but if you measure it with some kind of, you know, like fancy scale, you'll find out that one person got 10 milligram whatever and grams more than the other one. Anyone that's making the argument is crazy, right? So the fact that the fairness of the pizza cutting up is not demonstrable, or at least is not precise, doesn't allow me to be just a nihilist and doing it.
Well, that is admitting to the fact that, I guess, demonstration was possible when cutting a pizza, just not the same kind of demonstration.
You could say that here. Yeah, that's why it's the analogy. I don't know how well it works. That I think that the using the word like criteria that we were discussing works a little better. In other words, I could say that the criteria for the fear cutting of pizza is more or less what everyone agrees to that to be, but they do only agree, and within a specific certain limit, right? So in other words, it's subjective, right? The fearness of cutting up a pizza has nothing to do with what the the pizza mint decides that the correct weight of a pizza is or something like that. Unlike with coins, where if you do it like a tiny bit different, then you end up with a different amount of money. But that doesn't, and there's no central authority of cutting up pizzas, like foundationalism. There's no nobody. There's no like board of, the UL, whatever they're called, of pizza cutting. There isn't such a thing. But that doesn't lead you to the conclusion that, it sort of does in the sense of like, if I could convince my three friends that I should get the whole pizza, they should only get the crumbs. I sort of did it, but then I still didn't divide it equally. I just convinced them to accept an unequal arrangement. But the equal arrangement...
It's unequal because of the standards of everybody else.
Sort of, yes. But that's a standard. That's still a standard. Even though it's not nothing. It's a standard because of everyone else's standard, yes. There's a kind of equality in it.
Is it really that?
Even if it's not precise or objective in like the most foundational sense.
Is it true because of like a social verification, or is it true because...
No, I don't think it's social.
That are demonstrable at a certain distance or at a certain, using bigger criteria as a measurement, right? So whether or not...
He will actually end up saying, I think, he will end up saying something different, which is entirely different. If you read further, I think that he ends up saying something like this, that we know he ends up saying something that things that are not demonstrable, that only means that we know their effects without knowing their causes. But knowing the effects, maybe they don't even have the kind of causes that can be known, or maybe they do. But the fact that we don't know them doesn't mean that we don't know anything about them. So that's more like most of modern sciences, right? More like there's a problem here. But if you continue, I'll show you what he says. Okay. At least we can like sort of understand that there are levels. Like in other words, can you go to a pizza cutting store, a school, with a teacher to do a better job at cutting pizza? Yeah. And who decides what the better job is? Well, it's not whoever runs the school. Is it humanity in general, or like all people who ever eat pizza? Maybe. But they're still valuable. It's still valuable to learn it if you're interested in a career in pizza cutting. You should definitely go to that course. Otherwise, your pizzas will all end up being very messed up. And now we're not aiming to the full precision, but we're aiming for some kind of acceptable precision or acceptable knowledge. And there might even be some techniques or some rules or some generalizations that you'll be able to use to guide you in your pizza cutting career, which you should definitely learn. He literally says like this. He literally says, and if you go to the beginning in the second sentence, sort of the first paragraph, it says the things that are beautiful and just about which politics investigates. So politics is what he calls ethics here. Involve great disagreement and inconsistency, so that they are thought to belong only to convention and not to nature. He says these subjects are so inconsistent, and they have so much disagreement. These are two different problems. That causes people to say that ethics is conventional. So conventional means doesn't really exist, right? What you call social facts. Right? But he doesn't agree with that yet. He's not convinced. See, you when you get convinced by this argument, you're also doing things way too fast. Maybe yes, maybe not. But he's saying that there's a problem. And even the things that are good have this kind. So he starts. He says, even the things that are good have this kind of inconsistency. For example, if you take any good thing, both external good things and internal good things, you'll find that it's sometimes not good. For example, money, for example, power, for example, courage, for example, patience. All of these things are like good, but not always.
Mess a couple of people over.
What?
They'll mess up a few
people. Yeah. And this is like the prime example of why it's very hard to make ethics into a science, into a demonstrable science. Because most of the things you say, the opposite of them is also true. You should take life more easy, yes. You should also take it more seriously. Well, sometimes you could say, okay, so you see that this kind of problem is not really the pizza kind of problem. It's a much more basic kind of problem, which people pass over usually when discussing these things. It's the problem of, like, maybe we can't have, like, some sort of formula that covers enough cases. Maybe the question is not precise enough, like, is eating good? I mean, the answer always ends up being in measure, it's good. But that's just, like, maybe that's useful, that answer. But there's still, like, confusion, there's still something here that causes people to not be able to talk correctly about things. And there might even be more basic conflicts about what is good that are not really resolvable or not easily resolvable. This is the thing that the problem has. And he says, he claims that this is the problem that causes, there are some people that claim that politics, that the good is a matter of convention. And the reason they claim that is because of this. Right? It's not really because, well, who says that things are good? Maybe that's not a very smart argument, because obviously money is good. It's not clear that that should be the question. But also sometimes it's not good, and that's also very clearly true. So whichever solution you sort of like side file, you fall on, like, well, it's not good. Well, that's a lie. It is good, it's a lie. It's sometimes good and sometimes not good. Okay, so maybe we're making some progress. Maybe we'll figure something out. So there's no such thing as good and not good. It's only what you want. Well, that might be a solution to the problem. It's not like necessarily the most obvious and the most simple solution. But it's a solution. It's true that it's a big enough problem to cause that solution to be a possibility. But we still have to think about the problem, not about the solutions. If that makes sense. Right? And this is why we have to be happy to speak about things roughly and for the most part. That's his sort of at least preliminary solution. Like if I tell you that having money is good, don't come up with a counter argument of the one guy who had too much money and therefore killed himself. Because of course I didn't mean that to begin with. He's sort of forewarning himself from all kind of exception arguments, exactly. But that basically means that he's not looking for the kind of definition or demonstration that that kind of argument would destroy. Because there are, of course, in math, any exception disproves your theory. But in ethics, it doesn't. Why doesn't it? Because things can still be good for the most part, even if they're not always good. Why is that? Well, good question, but it's true. So at least we shouldn't let ourselves be destroyed immediately by such arguments, because that's not the kind of subject we're in. Now this is very interesting. This means that we have to write now, in the next paragraph, we have to figure out who we should learn from or with, or who is ready to learn, to study this subject. Okay? He says, and he starts with like the general statement and then applies it. All people are good at making distinctions about the things they're acquainted with. And each of these is a good judge of those things. So let's assume, right? Let's assume that we understand that we're not looking for like some general demonstrations. So we have to start somewhere. Now, it seems obvious that people are good at making distinctions, at knowing the difference between good and bad, or better and worse, or what works and what doesn't work, about the things that they're familiar with. That's almost like a tautology. Right? Bakers are good at knowing which bread is good. and bankers are supposed to be good at knowing how to make money or how to steal money, something to do with it, and so on. Okay? Now, there is such... Now, it's interesting. There's something called good judgment in general. What does that mean? How could there be such a thing? And if you think about it, ethics is sort of about that. That was the first chapter, and the second chapter was about this, right? How politics is the knowledge of the good of everything. Because we're telling you how to live your life. I'm not telling you how to be a good cook. To be a good cook, you got to go to cooking school. But being a good person, you have to know the good as such. Now, who knows that? Someone who knows everything. Seems to be very hard, just even to start learning about ethics, you have to know about everything. For this reason, and he follows through on this logic, for this reason, it is not appropriate for a young person to be a student of politics. Since the young are inexperienced in the actions of life, well, those are the things about which politics speaks and from which it reasons. So this is the first reason. Young people should not come to the course on ethics. Just like people that have no experience with cars should not come to the course on how cars work. Or on what would make a good car. Really even slightly more advanced than that. Why not? You don't know what you're talking about. That's why all the university courses that teach ethics are wasting their time. Because ethics is about how to live your life, and you got no experience of life, or no substantial experience of adult life, how would you even know what we're talking about? So you should only study this like after you have some experience of life.
Some models of ethics are easy to teach without... They're not
the ones that pretend to be demonstrations. Maybe. But not the ones that decide what is a good life. This is like his basic argument. Now, of course, you'll notice that there's something circular right away, but he didn't forget that, right? In other words, I mean, he doesn't entirely say that right here, but it's almost going to be saying that only good people should study ethics. Because they have experience with good things. So they know how to talk about them. Because obviously someone who has a bad experience of life is not who he's talking about. Because he knows how to be bad. Well, maybe in some funny sense. You could say, and he says it in the next thing. And then says there's another reason why young people are not good. That's one reason why young people shouldn't come to the course. And also since the young are apt to follow their impulses. So there would be no use of coming to these discourses since their end is not knowing but action. This is another thing. And then for this he says, I think, this doesn't really, not talking about age, this is a certain maturity of character. Right, so there's two problems. Young people don't have experience, so they don't know what they're talking about. And secondly, young people tend to follow their impulses. Citation needed. And therefore, there would be no use for them to study ethics. Why not? Study politics, he calls it. You should stop saying ethics. Because ethics is not, like we said a second ago, ethics is about making you into a better person. It's not about knowing anything. It's not a theoretical knowledge. It's a practical knowledge. And in some way, it's not just someone that doesn't have feet or something like that is not going to gain much from a running course. So someone that doesn't have, what?
Just to understand it, as it relates to an example that I'm still using, meaning if someone ever saw how a pie pizza is cut, they may cut it into squares, something like that.
Well, the second one. The first one is someone who doesn't eat pizza, or we're talking about splitting the pizza among your friends, right? Geometry. Someone who doesn't split pizza ever is not going to be able to learn our more precise pizza cutting course just because they don't know what pizza is. And I'll try to explain something like, well, you'll notice that if you cut it this way, then you end up with the wrong shaped pieces or something like that. And he doesn't know what's wrong with that. Right. If I was going to give you like a theory of, you know, the reason why you got to cut it this way is because such and such, and now you could apply that knowledge and different cases and know how to cut the pizza better. That is all useful to someone who already has some, what you call, experience. In other words, he already knows the effects. He already knows how good pizzas and bad pizzas works. He just doesn't know how to get to always have the good ones and not the bad ones or something like that. I can teach him that. But if you have no idea what a pizza is, or if you don't have experience of eating pizza and splitting it with your friends, then you're not going to stand. The first thing, you're not going to understand what I'm talking about even, right? Well, maybe I'll show it to you and do it all in one course, but I'm saying, if you never saw pizza and you never split it, it's just going to be a waste of time. You're not going to know what I'm talking about. The second problem is someone who just doesn't want to cut the pizza evenly. He wants to have the whole pizza for himself. Now, if it's a course about having the theoretical knowledge of how the even pizza would be cut into, that would be very nice. But since this is not that course, this is the course of how to cut the pizza evenly, then the guy who is just, I don't want to, he needs a different course, how to be the biggest chazer. That's a different course. That's not this course. And he's going to gain nothing out of this course by the criteria of the course, right? He's going to gain some knowledge, but that's not the criteria. The criteria is action.
It's interesting then they critique the young for being interested in not knowledge but action.
Well, he's not interested in action with the wrong ones. And when he says young in that meant sense, he says, I don't mean young specifically, I mean bad people, basically, uneducated people. So in other words, you first need to have both, like the most basic thing, right? It's very interesting. You need to have the most basic.
Like the goal is general knowledge. Which to me doesn't seem any less intelligible to someone just because they don't have exposure.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is because we just have too much exposure to everything that it's hard to realize this. But I think that
that's what I meant by it doesn't have enough exposure to understand that, like, the easiest way to divide a pizza is to do it this way instead of squares.
Yeah, yeah. Or I don't know if that example is going to illuminate this problem. Middle of a class, you could listen.
Okay, fine, I'm worried.
Yeah, you could call me later in about half hour.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, bye. But more like, I'm trying to think of an easy example for this kind of problem. Maybe my pizza is not a good example for that. Let's say, tell me an example. I want to show how not knowing the thing that we're trying to explain,
it doesn't allow you to accept or understand the source criteria.
Well, I have this problem all the time with people, just to be clear, right? If I come and tell someone, the real meaning of the Kabbalah is not to answer this question, but to answer a different question. Now, the people who've never had the problem or have never read, they don't really know what I'm talking about. Maybe I can tell it to them, but then I'll be doing the first course too. But assuming that I don't, I'm just not solving any problem the person has. Well, that's a way of talking about this. It's not say it that way, but, right? Or if someone comes and says, he's going to say it in another way in a minute, which is what I'm keeping on. I keep on reaching to. If I want to tell you something like why, right? Certain principles, like why is it something like why is it easier to build a plane? The helicopter, or the opposite, I don't know which one is easier, or why does one need more energy than the other, okay? And you don't know what a plane or a helicopter is, you've never met them in your life. I'm pretty sure that that would be a very useless course. In the sense of, you're not even going to know what, right?
What, a subject matter?
Yeah. You have to have experience, you have to have built planes, or have known about that. And built helicopters, and then I can tell you, well, this has to push the air, and that has to schlep the air, or whatever it is, and now you even know why. See, now you have knowledge, and maybe it's only practical knowledge, or whatever it is. But if you don't know what I'm talking about, then it's like, you could sort of, again, you could like get everything as a sort of formal, empty formalisms, like in like A's and B's and C's. But that's not understanding for him. That's just doing logic. And logic doesn't care about the content of things. It's a very great thing. But that's not knowing anything, right? I mean, if you want to know why wood has different attributes, different works, that reacts differently to water than plastic, you have to have some experience with water and plastic. I'm calling this experience just in the sense to differentiate from knowledge. I don't have to know why wood is this way and why plastic is that wood, just the only kind, according to him, only whys count as knowledge. But I have to know at least that. All right? And the knowing that basically means either I did it myself or someone told me that when you spill water on wood, it tends to blow up. And you do it on plastic, nothing happens most of the time. Okay. Now we could do material science and figure out why, and maybe you want to make a kind of wood that doesn't have the problem or so on. But you could do a lot of things. You could do a lot of work. But without having the most basic knowledge of the facts or the experience, right, the empirical facts, you're going to get nowhere. And in a very similar way, he thinks that if I want to talk to you about way of living your life, or ways of life, or the good things in life, and you have never done those things, or if you've only done bad things and I want to teach you about good things, what am I even talking about? I actually think that this is a real thing. For example, should I give like bad examples? I actually think that this is something that happens all the time. And in other words, he's coming out against theoretical ethics, right? He's coming out against doing ethics from first principles, because he says, and then Lincoln says in the next page, we don't really do anything from first principles. All the first principles, we know we came from the bottom up and then we came back down. But since we don't really know the first principle of ethics, we definitely can't be doing it in this case. But there's a whole bunch of facts, and now human life is weird in this way, right? So now, when I talk about pizzas or I talk about tables and chairs, all those things are pretty simple to experience. And since you have a lot of other experiences, you might even be able to analogize from some experience you have. You sort of know what I'm talking about, even if you were never on a helicopter. You sort of could understand it. You never rode a motorcycle, but you could understand very simply why it's like more more dangerous than riding a car and so on. But when you talk about the things we call virtues, right? It takes something like courage, right? Courage is one of the classical virtues, and not one of the modern virtues, more or less. Nobody believes in it, and nobody practices it. Nobody even thinks that it's a thing. We have different ways of talking about it, but we don't call them courage. Now, if you never had courage, or you never acted with courage, or you never maybe saw someone acting with courage, or read a good book about someone acting with courage, all those things are some kind of experience. I could give you a long drusha about why we have to talk more about courage and why courage is very good, and maybe sometimes it's not good, like everything else. So we got to find out when it is good and figure out some definition for this. But you're not going to get anything out of it. Not in the sense of not being able to repeat the words. It's just not going to help you have more courage. I think because human goods and human... he doesn't say any of this. I'm just telling you things from my experience. Because human life is... I mean, he does talk about this in some way, where he talks about the basic problem of ethics being that there's too many human goods. There are too many things. There's too many ways of living your life. There's very few ways of cutting a pizza relative to that. And very few ways of making a plane or a car. But there's a lot of ways of being a person. And people that have seen or experienced by themselves, or maybe seen by people they, like I said, you could maybe get it from others, certain ways of life, have no idea what those ways of life are. You could tell to them, but they still don't know what it is. It's like like telling a blind person colors, the famous example. He doesn't know what it is. And I can't even start discussing with you if it's good or bad, because you've never seen it. And you don't even have any way of discerning which is a good one and which is a bad one. I mean, the psychologists and people like that have been talking about these kind of things. If you take... if you have like a whole society or a whole like some sub-society or something in which there's no say something like, there's no good fathers, right? Which are people that some take responsibility and authority, and maybe there's bad ones who only take authority without responsibility. Maybe there's good ones. There's like hurtful ones that only take responsibility without authority. Hurts the father and makes them a bad father. And maybe there's the like balanced ones, or maybe you're closer to that. And then we can start talking about this. But if we never saw it, we could have a look at theoretical things, and someone could tell us, oh, so you're talking about the patriarchy, which I've read is a bad thing. Well, maybe, but I don't know. I've never seen the patriarchy either, so I don't know. But, or maybe, then there's like a theory, so you have to, all these things are based on experience of human life, of good and bad ways of being human beings. And very often people have no experience of certain good ways or of bad ways. And it makes very hard to do any real ethics or to make any progress in something like a course, in something like a study of it. And I'm sure, yeah, this is true for the bad ways also, of course. Like there's all kind of like naive people who like never really lied, never really figured out that, you know, you could just lie and say things that are not true and benefit. Most kids figure that out at some point. Well, some people never figured it out. And it makes it very hard to deal with them. I not only to deal with them, a practical problem. It makes it very hard to talk about, okay, so when is it good to lie? When is it bad to lie? Is it, you know, never? Should we make the rule that you never lie? Should we sometimes lie? Should we manipulate people, half lies? All these concepts just don't exist to them because they don't have any experience of it. And if they read a book that says, you know, you're allowed to lie, to LS and nothing to LS, and they're like, it's some kind of, it means nothing. It's not helping them. It's not helping anyone. So I actually think this kind of problem of not having experience of life, he probably thinks mostly good, but either good or bad, makes it very hard to do ethics. That's why the student of ethics is an older person, according to him, or the student of politics. Because you need to know a lot of things in order to start judging them and to start understanding them. In a similar way to which, you know, you need to know a lot of things to start any science. The thing is that many sciences, or at least the things that we consider, or also that he considered, you know, basic sciences, physical sciences, are things that we have a lot of experience. Like, I've been experiencing, you know, mechanics and physics since I was a few weeks old. I'm doing a lot of experiments with it, you know, drop it, see what happens. But again, if I either myself or secondhand maybe don't have a lot of experience with becoming a good person, then how can I do a science of it? And this means, now this is very important, this means that then the first question that people do, like about the ethics, like why should I even want to be a good person? Right? Maybe we should be bad people. Prove it to me. This is a very problematic question, if you realize what I'm saying now. Why is it a problematic question? Not because you shouldn't have an answer to it. Maybe you should. But because it's like, prove it to me that things should fall down this way and not up. When I live on some other planet or some other universe where there isn't any direction in which things fall. You don't have any basis of facts, even of opinions. Right? I mean, we don't really know the facts because it seems one way and it's somewhat differently. But we don't even have any basic of seeming to be facts, any basis from which to start the discussion. Anytime we start, when you ask a question, why, like, you know, like, who says anything? That's asking the most fundamental questions, right? It's like the highest questions, right? So why be good anyways? And it's something, it's very similar to like, you know, why should things fall anyways? Or why should things do anything? And those are very good questions. Those are the fundamental questions. But in order to speak about them intelligently, or really in order to even ask them, I need to start with a fact. Like, we start all the way down here. Things keep on moving and falling and acting in certain ways. And we observe them. We make sure we're observing correctly. And then we figure out, okay, that's because of that. And then we can go one step higher and ask, why is that? And why is that? Until we hopefully get to the end of everything, which nobody got to yet, but hopefully. But when you start, if you would start purely from there, without any experience, like, why is it good to be a good person? Well, what is a good person first? there's a basic problem. You could say, well, how, who said that? I agree with you. But if I would have some basis of fact to start with, like I have some experience, like, okay, it's good to have money. It's also good to be healthy. It's also good to have friends. It's also good to not be too much, to fight too much. The little bit is good. I don't know. So and so on. And I know these things from experience. It's good to have courage, not too much, and so on. Then I could start thinking, okay, but why is it good to have courage? What makes that good? Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe being whatever the opposite of courage is. Maybe being a coward is actually better. And I could bring you proof. Okay, this guy was a coward and he was more successful in life, or no problem. We'll figure out. We can have a discussion about this. But you can't discuss any science or any knowledge or anything from just starting from why should there be courage in the world? That's a good question. But what is this thing that we're talking about? After we finish talking about it all from the bottom up, then we might be able to go top down and have like this one clear deduction that shows us also why to have courage. And why courage is a good thing. But since we're not there yet, I mean, even if we would be there, we'd be accepting it on faith. You know, Plato said that this whole system, and that's why you should have courage. Okay. But if we want to do some research, if we want to do philosophy, if we want to do if we want to like think through it from ourselves, we're going to have somewhere to start to think from. Just like in any other thing. And if our subject is human life, or all the goods of human life, or what's the only good, what's the ultimate good, what something like that, we're going to have to start with a lot of data about that. And assuming, and this is where we get into some kind of paradox, assuming if someone lives in a whole life where he never met a good person, or he never was a good person, then he could always come with this like chachma and say, yeah, but maybe we should be bad people. Yes, maybe. But that doesn't really help me for my research into the good people, for which I have to start studying the good people. You want to also study the bad people? We'll study also the bad people, no problem. But you're missing some kind of basis for where to start the discussion. And if after, you know, taking all this into account, we'll come to some kind of conclusion that every only thing that matters is power, no problem. But that will also have to be started from some kind of experience, right? So this is how we end up in this like funny paradox where in order to start studying ethics, you need to already be a good person or at least know about good people.
It doesn't say that you have to be
good. No, it doesn't say. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he ends up saying that though.
He ends up saying that about the people.
And the next thing it sort of says, it says here in the end of like I said, maybe you'll find out why the bad things are bad, but if to find out why the good things are good, you have to have experience with the good things. He does say in where I was trying to get to over here, here. Let's go to. It says this explicitly. If you go to the end of this second chapter on second paragraph on the second page, where there's like a three after 1095b, it says this is why one who is going to listen adequately to discourse about things that are beautiful and just and general about things that pertain to political matters need to have been beautifully brought up. Beautifully is this person doing a very little translation. That means well brought up, beautifully in the moral sense, right? Not by means of habit. For the primary thing is that something is so. That primary means from our side. And if this is sufficiently evident, there's no additional need for the reason why. Well, there might be a need in some scientific sense, but if you see that something is good and don't have to prove it, you might have to explain why it's good or how it stands in proportion to other things that are good and so on. But if someone was not well brought up, such a person neither has or easily gets hold of the things that come first. And if one neither has them nor has it in him to get hold of them, so either you have to be good, already have good virtues, or you learn them, or you at least listen to someone else that has them. And he quotes Hesiod saying that the best is someone that knows things, but the second best is someone that listens to people that know or that have good education. So you end up sort of, and this is actually the answer for why it's actually very legitimate to do this manipulation that we did, that in order to become a good person, you need to sort of be good, yeah, well-educated. Now, being well-educated, of course, does include some instruction. It does include me telling you, these are the good things. But I'm not telling you in order that you should know that these are the good things. I'm telling you in order for you to gain beginnings, right? So you should see them, that these are the good things. And then, in some sense, it's evident, but I still only know the effect. If you want to know, like, you know why they're good things, which would be doing philosophy, you have to start after that. But you're only going to understand it if you were brought up well. Or if, in these cases, calls it habits. If you have, right, not by knowledge, because you can't have that knowledge before you're good. But you have to first be good. And then you might say, then, if I'm really good, then why do I need proof for why to be good? Well, you don't. This is all another way of saying that you can't make a bad person good by arguments. Right? Because if there would be a way to prove that you should be a good person, then you would have been able to make a bad person good by arguments. Right? And you remember Plato was very worried about if ethics can be taught and so on, but it seems to me that the experience is for sure that bad people don't become good by arguments. They become good by just becoming good. You can't reason someone into becoming a better person. You could reason someone, and why is that? According to what we're saying here, it's because you can't reason someone into seeing anything. You could reason someone into explaining why things are after they see them. At least as long as we don't have like some kind of fundamental science of things, maybe even after. In other words, maybe there is such an ultimate science of everything, but I can't teach it except by the way of starting from the bottom. Anyway, that's the basic. This is also why we should listen to people's opinions. This is also why Shema Emes Mishambra does not mean what I said, the Cartesian meaning of it. It doesn't mean just accept the truth without relation. It means listen to everyone, and not actually to everyone, though. The people that you deem worthy of listening, again, because you have to start somewhere, but you should listen to them, and that might lead you somewhere. Of course, we have to figure out what the steps are to like make things better, to remove mistakes and so on, but you should listen to people. No, you shouldn't listen to anyone. Just like the famous quote from later in this book says, Plato's our friend, but we love truth more than Plato. And that's why we don't believe in the forms or the form of the good. And that doesn't say we don't like Plato at all. We only like the truth. Of course we do, and it's actually correct to listen to the opinions of the smart people, and they're usually more correct than the other people. That's just a bias that you should have, not a way of truth. If you figure out that you have a good question, then say that, ask a good question, no problem. But you can't start, for sure not for these kind of subjects. He doesn't believe that you can start from some kind of zero or something like that. Anyway, that's my drusha for today, more or less.